Honorable members, that was the presentation that we from the department and president on Operation Pakisa on the agriculture. Members were invited to interact with the presentation. Maybe before members answer any questions, let me ask this pertinent question so that at what point is this Pakisa going to be operationalized in the department so that members, if they are going to raise questions, they will know when to, at what point this financial year, that, because I need to resist the cycle of government, at what point Mr. Manyan, Dr. Ngoman, at what point? Just this one, and then I'll allow members to ask questions.
I'll start, Chairperson, Mr. Manya can add. Most of the initiatives covers areas of work that is already happening in government, but only seek acceleration. So in that sense, the implementation is going on, but in an accelerated manner. What we have done through this Pakisa to ensure that acceleration happens was to call departments to make sure the initiatives are included in their APPs for alignment with the resourcing, government resourcing model. So in one way, there's that continuity. In terms of new initiatives that still seek commitment from stakeholders, with the syndication program is running right now. Hopefully, once that approval has been granted, you're likely to look at implementation proper in the next financial year.
You want to add?
She has done reasonably adequately. And I'll just give a few examples. Those initiatives that are ready. For instance, we are working at the moment on the producer development support policy, which forms part of these initiatives. We have been working on the integrated development finance. We need to accelerate those, and the discussions are going on between ourselves, Treasury, the Land Bank, around the integration, and of course, we have to pull in the private sector partners in those areas. So some of them will go, and what we are also trying to do is to indicate which ones will form part of the phase one, that's for immediate implementation, and which ones will come in the next, and which come will come in the medium term.
Thank you very much. Honorable Chairperson, I can see that I'm the third person here in CDA, and yes, I should be the third person in the House. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, on a serious note, I just want to check this issue of to make the point that there's an access, equitable access to land for the purpose of economic development and agrarian transformation. So how would you make it a point or show that there is that? Perhaps this idea of working with other departments would come in, because I want to check it as a Department of Agriculture. How would you do that? I know that there is this, it has been achieved that there should be land for the farm workers. So that one has been achieved in some farms, but I want to check with you, then I want to get more clarity for that, because this is something good, very important, and it needs more clarity, and needs that it should be more pronounced. I'm just checking on that door, the chairperson. Thank you very much.
Yes, Chairperson, I think I will come in on the point of I've looked at the slide of the people that went to the operation Pakisa. So I there's always people that's excluded out of a discussion and a debate. So I looked at the government again. There was a lot of government, and if you even see under business organizations like the ARC, OBP, whatever, in my books fall under government. So the invitations to this Operation Pakisa, who decided who gets invited and what program was followed? Because if you start talking about access for farm workers, I would like to know, for instance, whether farm workers was part of the program and the development of that. That was my first question. I see FAWU and other organizations, but I'm not always so sure if they spread is everywhere in the country for all farm workers. Chairperson, and then I'm a bit concerned with the first answer already by saying that, you know, we've already started, it just needs to accelerate. And I think people was hoping that Pakisa will bring some kind of a new direction on what it is that we are doing in agriculture, because, you know, we can't just accelerate what we're busy doing, because I'm not sure that what is happening at the moment is taking us in the right direction. For instance, if we don't get a massive increase in budget, everything that we need to do at the moment, you know, we won't be able to do, Chair. I think we've already discussed things like research and trade and things like that is not getting the budget that we're supposed to give. So I would like to find out, and I know I'm actually asking the same question that you asked, Chair, and was already answered. It's a concern that I don't think we're going to get a massive increase in budget. And I would like to understand the thinking, because earlier I think the Minister said, you know, Treasury says they want a plan. So that plan, will it include a new budget proposal? Will it be different from what we are currently doing, so that we at least come up with a proper agricultural plan to say to the Treasury Department, this is the funding that we need to achieve A, B, and C? Because I honestly believe one of the reasons why agriculture is not funded properly is because we've never had an agricultural plan. So at least, Chair, again, like I said earlier on the food initiative, we are moving in some kind of a direction, but I think we need a proper funded, costed plan before there's more money that will come our way, Chairperson.
No, thanks, Chair. I know that people might think that I'm a little bit impatient. And I must make it clear that I'm not impatient. I'm counting from 1994. This is where I'm starting from. So I'm not impatient. I'm in a hurry, and I think we are very slow. You know, Chair, from the presentation of DDG Manye, he's continuously using three words: proposed, intention, and identified. And you know, those three words are not assisting me. You know what I want in front of me? I want a program. Something that will say to me that this was the intention, or this was what was proposed, and this is what we are going to do within this specific time. That's what I want, basically. But when Dr. Ngomani was answering the question you posed, she said that most of the issues that I identified here are not necessarily new issues. We just need to accelerate. The expectation is that they will be in the APPs. And I'm working on that statement now. Now, Minister, when you present your APP to the Portfolio Committee, one of the things which must happen is that all these issues which we are told that they are already in your APPs, you must identify them. These are the issues from Pakisa and they are in our APP. This is what we are going to do. And then if there are new issues, identify those new issues. And you must be able to say to us, what is it that you are going to, when are you going to implement those? Are you going to include them in the APP in 2017, 2018, or when are you going to include those in your APPs? But related to that, you know the slide number 9, the colors. What do those colors mean? You tried to explain, but you jumped before you could complete your sentence. The green, does it suggest that these are the programs that you, that are already in your APP and you are busy with implementation? The red, does this mean that these are the new programs which are not in the APPs? Or what do these colors mean? Once you have explained the colors, I will come back with my own question on those areas. Now, Chair, you know, I don't know. The unfortunate thing, Minister, is that I attend too many meetings. And the possibilities are that my mind tells me about what happened in those meetings and so on. We are not receiving this document for the first time. It's not for the first time. So it means it's the same thing which we've been getting and so on. I want progress. Makabani, on a very serious note, let's move forward. Akumele progress, you must know where we are going. Let's not in each and every meeting present intentions, areas identified, and so on. Let's have progress. This is the only thing that I want. So for today's chair, I'm not going to pose questions on intentions and so on. I will pose questions once I get the program. Thanks very much. On our members and gentlemen, can I have a call?
Thank you very much. Honorable Klapa, we are on the question and the answer session or discussion on the presentation. You just arrived late. Honorable Vakanga, you're raising your hand. Oh, you want to ask questions?
Yeah, it is on...
Talk to your mic.
It is on... You know, this thing, and I'm talking to it, it gives me trouble. Chair, it is on slide 16, relates on the land reform. It is quite true that more is needed to unpack the challenges behind land restitution. So I just want to find out how soon can the mini LEP be held? Because this is due to the sensitive nature of the subject at hand. It is important that we move speedily, just to emulate the words Pakisa. And also, how far are we from achieving the accelerated land development and redistribution initiative goals? Also, the acquiring of land by government for smallholders farming is commendable, but issued will be on the selection process of the smallholders farm. On slide, Chairman, you'll forgive me, man, I'm suffering from my eyes these days. On slide 17, it's related to the three commodities, base work stream, livestock, horticulture, and grain. How soon will the horticulture, livestock, and grain stream initiative be implemented, and can we also have a SWOT analysis done in order to avoid oversight. Chair, I think I will just stop here, thanks.
First question on the the optimizing the management of natural resources, unlocking water to expand horticulture production. I see you specifically talked about horticulture, but generally there is a few group who have access to water for farming, and I heard the Minister of Water Affairs today was still saying agriculture is the biggest user of water in the country. And the question is, as you unlock for horticulture, are we not going to include those other sectors which has got problem of water? Because if you look at the water provision, it's only for the few. The 67% that you talk about is for the few. How do you make sure that this water covers even the smallholder farmers and other people? The other question that I'm having to agriculture, I don't see you prioritizing unlocking land for agriculture. I know that rural development deals with, because there are a lot of small farmers, ministers that were visited in the country where they need land to farm. They are struggling, and rural development, it's got its own priorities which are not focusing on farmers, besides restitutions and other things, but unlocking for the farmers, particularly those that want to begin farming, those that want to grow farming, becoming, because the president said you must commercialize the farmer. So most of them, they don't have land, those smallholder farmers. So I don't see it as your priority. And even with the rural development on the 27 issues that you have identified, I don't see where they say allocating land for farmer, particularly smallholder farmer. I don't see it. how are we going to manage that? The acknowledging that it's a very good program, if indeed it will be implemented, because we are very good in putting in place programs, but very weak in implementing them. As Honorable Steyn has indicated, issue of resources that we have even lamented. Because the one thing, and the other thing that we don't see here, is the implementation of the Maputo Declaration. It's not here. How the country is intended, because the SADC decisions are supposed to bind us to South Africa. So you expect that as you develop this plan, you'll have the progressively realization of that, the Maputo Declaration. Is this PAKISA going to take us there? When are we arriving? Because on the African continent, they've got their plan, 2063. Are we going to be able to reach that plan again, besides our NDP and sustainable development goals, as put by UN, which the issue of food security is a major issue which we're supposed to achieve. this will include the, at some point there were issues of that were talked about between rural development, because there was a thin line of the two departments. But we were told that now the Pakistan has identified the heart will be dealt with rural development. Is it rural development? You have been explaining like that, the heart and the soft. Which one, the agriculture deal with, which soft or heart? So if you can get clarity and just give even some examples of this soft or hard thing, so that as we are going to deal with your APPs, we're able to look for the hard or the soft, those issues. I don't see, of course, maybe it might appear on the business plan. But I've seen your APP. I've tried to locate it. I didn't see it. Minister and Dademani. The census on the smallholder farm, which is one of the key issues for us to establish a baseline for development of smallholder farmers. And which can assist to monitor the progress and the and is it by deliberation that we have not included forestry in the Pakisa, because with the resolutions, you know, the good part is that you have invited us to your Congress. We know that you have adopted the agri-forestry. Yes. So, and how do you delink it now with the in the Pakisa when you have resolved to actually in the layman's language, to combine the two, they were coexisting in one area, for the other to assist in absorbing the what is it, carbon dioxide that is not needed as part of climate change and all those things. So I don't pick them up here. It might be that you have summarized, you have done too much summary. But if they are, and the last one is on the pronouncement by the president, the 30% procurement for small scales. Do we have a plan? Because you talk about the producer, smallholder producer, comprehensive smallholder producer support and the finance model. But this one, the procurement, I don't see it yet. So that social development, when they buy, actually theirs, because it's more indigenous, theirs is strictly 100% buying from smallholder farmers. Didichi, yeah, we agree 100% buying from smallholder farmers. Yes. Because you are dealing with indigenous, I know you will support this one. So those are the questions. Can we get response?
Thanks, Chairperson. I will only touch one and think the others will be dealt with. So on the issue of forestry, the reason forestry was not part was based on the basis that we could not quantify the total contribution of forestry into our job because of the division between Class A and Class B and other forest formations. And by that time, they have not yet finished the policy on agroforestry, which would have been a requirement to quantify the number of jobs and the contribution thereof.
remember by then, unfortunately, the DDG Forestry left the department, and the new one arrived from Rome. Obviously, I'm sure as we go forward, those are issues that we may take on board, because there was each component to be in Operation Pagesa, there was needed to have been some proof that such a branch would contribute into the fundamental plans that were put up as to what Operation Pagesa is supposed to be. And I appreciate your question on its contribution to climate change mitigation as an area, as well as a source of food. But by then, we could not quantify how much food would be is produced in forestry, except that we know the concept, as was articulated at the Congress. But at that point, we have not yet come with that clear policy.
Yeah, I'm going to let Rowena talk to one or two, and Marcele, and I'll take the others, the rest with Dr. Ngomantu.
Thank you, Meche. I'm just going to respond to a few. The one, I think, the pertinent one is whether we implementation ready. And to
not exactly, I want to intimidate you. We don't know you, ma'am. Those don't. Others, they are frequent visitors. That's why we don't ask their names. So you must start by telling us who are you and which department you're coming from.
My apologies. So my name is Rowena Jumat. I come from the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. And like Mr. Mania said, my role in Pagesa was to project manage on behalf of the department. The question that I would try and deal with is, to what extent are we operational ready? And maybe our preparation around resources, our approaches around resources, and to add to what the minister has also said. So just post the lab, what we did as what is referred as the post-lab phase, is that we've met with DAFA and rural development internally, because you'll remember that not everybody could be part of the lab, and so there was a phase of reporting back and a phase of buying and ownership. And so we had about 2 weeks of reporting back what the initiatives were about, in DAF, and same happened in rural development. So that's slide 9 that shows the green and the red initiatives, with initiatives that both departments felt that we were at some level ready to implement, either because we have similar initiatives going on, or that we had resources to start a new initiative. And so, like Dr. Nkumani and Mr. Mani have said, some are new and some is a bit of the old. But I also wanted to remind the House that the way these initiatives were developed was between industry, government, and civil society. And so there was an interchange of ideas and solutions. And so often what you have is a tweak of the old or something completely different. And so that is the nature of the initiatives. It's not the wow, this thing is something new and it's going to change things, but there's a commitment to fast track things we felt were working in the past, and so it's a mix of the two. So we have commitment from DAF. So the ones in green is commitment to start 17-18, and the ones in red, we are particularly concerned that we don't have the resources for. On top of that, I will add that the open day, which the president pronounced on at the launch, the process towards the open day is also to entrench the implementation readiness by where the nature of the open day is for all role players to sign off on an agreement to say that we agree on implementing these initiatives. So that is on the first one. Then just on what Minister was saying, what was very important for the Pakis or part of the methodology is that you have to have evidence to show that grains, livestock or horticulture has a statistical backing that it's going to contribute to economic growth. Unfortunately, forestry through the NDP was put in a fourth quadrant, if you remember when it was, the NDP was released, which meant that forestry didn't have a high growth potential according to the NDP, and it didn't have a high job creating potential. And through the Pakisa process, the research that we commissioned almost reinforced the position of the NDP, so we didn't have very solid backing for it. But we're hoping that the 2030 plan of forestry is one of the plans we're also wanting to, through the permission of the process and the committees, to kind of start including that. I think I'll stop there.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Honorable Minister. My name is Nasele Mehlomakhulu. I am from the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. I will therefore take questions that were related to land and others. Honorable Chair, when the Department of Agriculture approached DPME and Presidency to host this Pakisa, they secured this approval on one condition. That condition was to host and implement this Pakisa jointly with the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. Precisely to talk to your question, Chair, to say how do we prioritize land for agriculture? So this was identified and acknowledged upfront to say agriculture cannot go and plan alone and plan for agriculture while we know very well that land is a key enabler for that to happen. So we hold hands and we went to this planning together. There are currently on the table, slide 15, about five initiatives that came out of the Pakisa that deals with the land reform issues. To address the question to say, how are we ensuring that there's going to be access to land on top of what the department is currently doing, which I won't talk to that because this presentation is not about what we're doing, but about what Pakisa is saying we must do. But you'll recall at the opening remarks of this presentation that Dr. Ngomane mentioned what is on slide 16, that given the complexity of the land issue in the country, the 5 weeks that was afforded to the participants could not yield what she referred to as radical land reform initiatives, to an extent that this process proposed a further refinement and rethinking of what is on the table. That is referred to as the 2 weeks mini-lab. The question is, when are we hosting this? As a department, we're planning next month, April 2017, to commence that 2 weeks. Subject, of course, to availability and securing participants. Not to take anything away from those that participated in the 5 weeks, but land reform in the country is indeed a very difficult issue to crack. And I think Honorable Steyn asked the question, who was invited and what? So in these 2 weeks, we're trying to widen the net as much as possible to ensure that we secure participants that will be in that room for those 2 weeks and make sure that we crack the land issue. As I'm saying, but that is set for the week for April, dates of which will be communicated as we're busy now identifying and inviting participants. If honorable members here are having proposals as to who must those be, I'm sure, Chair, we can receive those and include them on the list so that we invite those you believe are adequately experienced and resourced to tackle the issue. I will hold it there, and I can take further questions, Chair, as a caller, if I left anything out.
Thank you, Chair. There are just a few more of the remaining questions. Honorable Steyn, the process that you probably would have seen in slide number 2 of scoping before the lab actually ran through from June up to September. Whilst we were doing the scoping, we have consulted various role players who participated in the various areas that ultimately determined the work streams. And we have actually also drawn, we have actually met more people during the scoping phase than we had at the Pakistan lab itself. And we drew largely from that list and further additions. Some of the people that you may have expected would have been there and were not there, some were had concerns around the dates, some had a concern around the methodology, but ultimately said, all right, some of them ultimately came through. But we could only take a certain number, and within the limits of that number, we have invited not all of the people who were in the scoping phase were actually taken on board, but we made sure there's a adequate representation of these various commodities and work streams. The Honorable Maloyi, it's I can appreciate your concern that we may seem not to be moving too fast, particularly if you look at from 1994 until now. But the reality is we would want to make sure that we do not rush this plan and we later find there are gaps having not thought through it. For instance, the land, when we would have wished to have completed it at that point, it became very clear it needed us to go much deeper. Now, the green components, I think Rowena has spoken to that partly, that those are the initiatives that we have accepted they could be worked on into implementation. We were already late for 17, 18 very clearly because the budgeting has started last year and the approval process on the PAKISA does not necessarily reside alone with the department. It also has to be finally the final report be signed off there, and that's why we say the final report will be signed off in July. But in this variation is initiatives, there are components already that we can take forward, and we're indicating those greens that a number of them have elements that could move immediately, and the totality of this will be done, and most of them will, the final plans in terms of budgeting will be included in the 18-19. But where the budget is already there, and the private sector, because also we're taking into consideration the private sector contribution, we will move immediately in some of those areas. But by and large, if you we're talking all the formalities, we expect that all the plans that are finalized will be formally be included in the 18-19 plans. But the various components you will see, and we will talk to those. Perhaps to talk to, and I'm sure Dr. Ngoman will speak to the fact that you seem to have seen this document somewhere else. I know we did present a similar document at the launch. So the chair may have shared it with you because when we concluded the lab, she was there. She got the document. Otherwise, it may be Dr. Ngomani who may have presented it at another forum. But also, we're trying to keep the consistency because it's only one plan. There was a question as to when do we present and implement horticulture. I believe the horticulture initiatives, some of them particularly around the issue of water, there's already work that is being done in another work stream that was being coordinated by Minister of Finance. We are pulling together all that work around the access to water. Now, horticulture, particularly on water, because it's in the agriculture, horticulture is the main water user. Both fruit and vegetable, by and large, the bulk of the water is being used there. And what we are expecting, Pakisa would help us, if we can use the horticulture to unlock the systems around water, it will work even much better for the other commodities because they are not using water as much compared to, or water is not as critical to them compared to the business in horticulture. So we're going to use horticulture as a test case to resolve the issues that we have. And the smallholder farmers are included in this horticulture initiative, and that includes expanding the areas of production in the fruit industry. It would include the smallholder farmers. But it has also been determined that if you're going to grow and get exports and get jobs, horticulture has a great potential. And three things that are needed for horticulture would be unlock the access to water, make sure you sort out the sanitary and phytosanitary agreements, make sure you unlock the finance. Those are the three areas that if they were unlocked, horticulture will be able to move and make the impact that is required. On the alignment of functions between ourselves, DAF and rural development, yes, we have had discussions and we have actually looked at what does a farmer require to farm. He requires land, and we've agreed that the responsibility resides with land reform, and we from agriculture will always provide the needs. We will assist them to identify the land that is suitable for agriculture. They will go on to acquisition and ensuring the tenure. The second requirement a farmer would have is around the production support, from inputs through to capacity building, training, and we have agreed and accepted that that is the role of agriculture in its entirety. The market access also, we've agreed agriculture should facilitate that, and agro-processing. And then we've discussed the infrastructure, provision of infrastructure, and we've accepted that provision of infrastructure has two components. The one component is the on-farm infrastructure and the off-farm bulk infrastructure, and we have accepted that there's the provision of the bulk infrastructure, off-farm infrastructure, is by and large part of what a rural development function would do, and therefore that department would provide for that, whilst agriculture will work on the infrastructure on farm. We have relatively reached an agreement, and we are busy working on signing on that agreement to work on this shift or this alignment of functions. And once that is done, the transfer processes will happen. We expect that in the 2017-18, we will probably jointly work together on those projects whilst we prepare for the 18-19, where a full transfer would have been done by that time. Chair, on the agricultural census, it is, yes, part of the PAKISA here. It has been fortunately funded by Treasury. It's in our budget for the MTF to implement the agricultural census, and we believe this we would link also to the livestock census, and we believe it will contribute. Of course, the South African Vulnerability Assessment that Dr. Moyen referred to, also we are implementing it, and it forms part of your information and baseline information, in this case, in the case of the food security, the vulnerability aspect. But we're seeing them as a total package of the information base that we are building alongside the farmer register that we're working on. On the budget issues, I'm sure Dr. Ngomane will speak better on this one because she comes from the presidency. But in 2015, Treasury has invited departments for proposals for additional budget requirements for 17-18. They were speaking about an MTech window that will open. We did a submission basing it on the APAP at the time, having identified already the commodities, and we submitted the budget request of 10.1 billion, both for the department and for the entities that are linked to the Department of Agriculture. And what we are hoping to do now is to update that submission once we have finalized the PADISA costing and resubmit. But all our engagements since that time with Treasury, we've always been referring them to that document. When they fund now the agricultural census, and we know we can tick because we keep reminding them, we have given you our requirements, they are known. And we use it as a document that we communicate. We would... It will now be superseded by the PADISA when we finalize that part. And we're hoping it could be used by all members as you help us to argue the budget for agriculture. We believe that document would be adequate to help in that area. Dr. Ngomane, I think there are a few questions that are left for you.
Thank you, Mr. Manya, and thank you, Chairperson, and honorable members of the committee. I'll try to address some few areas that colleagues wisely left out for me. The issue of Honorable Maloy is saying, this is not the first time we're seeing this document. I think we should not be surprised. Actually, the PAGISA on agriculture, land reform, and rural development is one of the PAGISAs that was consulted the most to ensure ownership and to deal with issues of the dualism in the sector. And that included that as part of the post-PAGISA program, we deliberately sought to engage with the study groups on the PAGISA just to raise awareness, which you might have interacted with the documents there. We also tried to ensure that we discuss with key stakeholders, particularly organized formations for buy-in, as indicated. The issue is to be consistent and engage on the same principles. The methodology is the same, and the initiatives that are not changing. So that's what explains it. It's not an indication of lack of implementation. The second issue I want to comment on relates to the process that colleagues has explained very clearly around the consultation process pre and going into PAGISA. Just to say that maybe the committee need to underscore that constant engagement, particularly of the farmers as direct stakeholders, as participants, as beneficiaries in the sector, should be maintained. We'll appreciate that if it comes up as a recommendation of the committee. Honorable Stain put a lot of emphasis around her understanding of PAGISA as bringing new direction, which is partly correct. But what we need to acknowledge in our sector is that there was a lot of fragmentation in the agricultural sector, both in terms of the duplications of programs across various sectors in government, contributions by civil society and all that, and that affected the impact that the sector could have achieved over time. And some of those areas that relate to fragmentation, lack of coordination and all that requires some improvements in efficiency and accelerated delivery. So that's why this PAGISA focus on both new transformative initiatives as well as strengthening or accelerating existing ones. I can use this as an example, Honorable Stein, if you go to maybe just slide number 12, a quick example there. In an attempt to unlock the constraints that's limiting growth in the sector, you want to think of improving the animal health situation or record in the country. So you improve our contributions to exports and all that in the industry. The same applies to unlocking water. We put in place land reform agenda without a corresponding agenda on water reform. As a result, you see even those smallholders that gain access to land have no access to water. They have no access to water rights and all that. So those areas is what we'll refer to as initiatives that seek to improve efficiency and to accelerate performance. The last comment related to the budget issue. Commitment as a country to progressively realize the Maputo Declaration. Correctly, Mr. Manya says I come from the presidency, DPME, not from National Treasury. But realizing the significance of National Treasury in helping us, the department, and the country progressively moving towards the realization of the Maputo Declaration, we deliberately made a point that the National Treasury is part of the PAGISA. And I must report to the committee that the state, the five-week period, full-time, at various levels, the highest level was the chief director in National Treasury, consistently supported by his team. But also the work that they are doing to try improve the sector in terms of developing development finance and all that. They actually came and presented, engaged with CFOs and all that. So in a way, we'll say PAGISA has elevated, I must say, the awareness around the need to address the finance challenges. More advocacy by the committee will help us achieve that target a bit faster. So we trust National Treasury. On the 30% set aside, the issue was, even on the 9-point plan, I think, the issue was tweaking the regulations around that, and our understanding is that the National Treasury is moving towards completion of that regulation, but that's a Treasury issue. They need to speak to it. There is a chairperson still on the budget issue. A specific initiative that seeks to re-engineer the development finance for the sector. So we move beyond speaking of access to finance schemes and all that, but we look comprehensively at providing support across sectors where government, private sector work in partnership to fund transformative initiatives within the sector.
So that's where we're at. If I can stop here, Madam Chairperson, the Minister can maybe conclude. Thank you.
Minister, you want to, we can talk the last and close.
Yes, only one matter on the issue that was raised by the Honourable Kisengaiza, to the fact that what programs do we have to accommodate farm workers? One of those is the issue of 50-50, which is driven by Department of Land Reforms and Development. Farm workers are targeted there, as the state will buy 50% of the farm and allocate them there as partners and joint owners of the farm. That is one of, not limited to.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members. That was the response. Any further questions? Honorable Spain?
Chairperson, it's just a comment to say that I hope the department is going to inspire us with something, because I've been waiting for a very long time. I'm coming a while, Chair. I can remember programs called Masi Bambisani and this thing and that thing, and all. I try to Google them now. I forgot all the programs, the names. It's coming and going, but we are not moving forward. So, Chair, hopefully we'll see some progress, but are we not going to see progress if we don't get an increase in budget, and we won't get an increase in budget if we don't put a proper plan on the table?
Honorable Maloy.
Now, DDG, you must be very slow when you respond again to this question. Are you saying the green, because you used the word immediately, are you saying the green, is it budgeted for in 2017, 2018, or you missed the target, it's not budgeted for, it will only be budgeted for in 2018, 2019? Is that what you are saying, the green? And I did not hear you, what are you saying about the red? Are you saying the red is long-term, or what are you saying about the red?
Before you respond, let's check it. No other questions. Honorable sir, you are fine. Okay. the issue of land bank on this, because it's not here as an institution that must support this. We started discussion around it for it to have a developmental agenda. Because so far, actually, Minister, I've got the letter. I'm not sure whether you've got it. I've sent it to your office. One farmer has sent that letter that E-Land Bank is repossessing his farm and all those things, taking it there. So, and was appealing that need assistance from Parliament. So, The issue of DTI and agro-processing, what's happening around that one, that part? because for agriculture, for us to empower particularly smallholder farmers, they must benefit out of the the processing of or the added value of the product. So what is happening on the where's the GTI and the agro processing, because it's resided there? So is it coming back when? Before you respond, let me welcome Honorable Madela from Rural Development Portfolio Committee. Welcome, sir. You can join your part, or you can ask questions if you have. You're welcome. Okay. I've seen, I'm not sure whether it's that document or what, the revolutionization of veterinary services. As far as I'm concerned, you don't have a budget, but it's in green. What's going to happen? Because the revolution means something else. You use the term that you
we are not going to. And lastly, with the, I know that you have other commodities. Your poultry is in trouble. How is Pakiza going to assist the poultry? I know that there will be a presentation on that one. if you, because I just thought I must throw it this way, because those commodities that we identify in your APEC, poultry is one of them. how is Pakiza going to help us to deal with the challenges in poultry? You can and the increase in production, the Pakiza is in green, but as far as I'm concerned, Ilimalizima, your Ilimalizima budget has been very low. It has not been covering the target as outlined by yourself, actually, the presidential pronouncement and yourself. It's in green, so the increase in production, particularly on the what you call that land, the unused land from the Bantu stand or communal land, yes. So it's in green. What's going to happen? Because seated here, I know that you don't have budget, but it's in green, yeah, that you're going to increase production and all those things. So what miracle is going to happen for you to meet the 1 million hectare production? So, and the Mr. Ramasos, veterinary services revolution. So what miracles are you going to do there? Yeah.
Chair, I'm going to try and be slow and careful in responding Honorable Maloy's question. What we have done post the lab is to look at the various initiatives because there are plans. What would it take? How ready are we? And the readiness is not only in terms of money. In each case, we would need a leader or a champion. We will need a team because it does not involve only agriculture and rural development. It also involves other departments. It also involves the private sector groups. And the ones that we have checked green are those initiatives that it seems we can move and round them up and get them ready for implementation. They are not necessarily, it's not necessarily that all of them have a budget in the immediate. It may be some components. I've already indicated, for instance, we are working on the producer support under the funding and financing. The dynamic business model that will talk to the producer support, amongst other things, it would require a policy. We are working on that policy. And we are already putting it through into the cluster system. We are working on the integrated development finance. There have been discussions. We've had in November already a national a dialogue on that. We are engaging the land bank. We are engaging Treasury on this. So there is already some elements of that are moving, and they are. It is in the email, in the APP, but not all of it. And those ones that we're saying are green are those that we would implement in the immediate. In the immediate, we're talking this coming financial year 17-18 and 18-19. We recognize the fact that in terms of the formal budgeting system, we have missed. If you're talking the total initiative, the budgeting cycle, but already some elements of some of the elements would already be included.
And those are the ones that we say would be the phase one. The red ones will be the phase two. They'll probably run in the next 3 years. We must do a lot of planning, a lot of negotiations around, and make sure that they are brought into the system. There were some questions. I think on the land bank, I've indicated we are discussing with land bank as part of the financial or the re-engineering financing. Both this will affect the loans that land bank is administering, as well as the grants that we are administering. We would want to make sure that they administer in a harmonized way, so that we use the grants that we have and the loans that we have, so that more people could have access to finance, particularly those who would meet the requirements for a portion of the loan funding or whole loan funding. We are addressing those aspects. I think on the issue of the veterinary services, again, it's also not a new area completely. Previously, the animal health organization assisted us in doing the review of the performance of the veterinary services in the country. It was followed by a strategic plan, and there are quite a number of components, yes, that would require funding. But the reality is, if we were to sit back and say, because we don't have the funds, we limit the plan, we would never be able to move. We are putting up a plan. The parts that can be funded, we will implement them. Those that cannot be funded in the immediate, we believe they will be funded at another point, both within government, within the donor community, and the private sector. And indeed, the private sector has always been willing that if they see this would unlock their business, they're willing to pay for some components of it. And this is why we are putting this plan, recognizing that there may be limits in the immediate on the availability of finances. But unless we have a plan, it weakens our ability to argue for the financing of the sector. We would want to put up a plan, and once this plan is adopted, and as I say, we believe everybody should use the same plan to argue for the support of the agricultural sector. What probably we did not say very well, and I must apologize, that we have not set the scope of this PAKISA at certain limitations. We did not take everything. There are all other important commodities we did not take. You'll see we've taken only 3 commodities that we prioritize in terms of their ability to contribute to growth and employment in terms of the impact. But there are other important commodities we did not choose. It's not that we will not address them. But we are taking the 3 commodities, we are taking the 4 cross-cutting issues as the ones that could make impact if we unlock them. And we believe if we can sort these ones out, we would have learned lessons. What we've learned from the other packages, as I said, education ended up with only 1 initiative. They said they were going to do ICT in education, only that. Health dealt with the clinics. Only. In some cases, some people even thought we were too ambitious to have 7 work streams. So we have not taken everything else, but it's not that the other things we will not deal with them. We'll continue to deal with them. But we've prioritized these areas for acceleration and for impact. I believe the other colleagues would add if they do. But also, having said poultry, We have considered it within the livestock commodity initiatives. But I think they would add before Minister comes in if there are any additions. Minister.
Thanks. Chairperson, I think on poultry there are a number of challenges. Challenges that would also include the fact that
there is the dumping of brown meat or meat in bone, as they call it, not only limited to AGOA, but also from the EU. And the need to use our own instruments to protect our own poultry, as well as the competitiveness of the industry, as we have been arguing with them on the issue of brining as an inhibiting practice. I'm sure we'll go broad into that in explaining. But we have met with the EU, with the Minister of DTI, to try to check why they could not be accepting our own white meat, which is the breast, so that it can offset which they dump on us. Those discussions are taking place. But also what makes it difficult is the fact that we still are faced with the high input costs in poultry, which means the bulk of the maize we used for feeding is not produced by us, given climate change, as well as the fact that we don't produce enough soybeans present another problem. So those are part of the issues we're dealing with. And I'm sure there have been a demand that there should be work done by the Department of Trade and Industry to look at assisting those farms in distress so that we protect and prevent the shedding of jobs. So those discussions are taking place. Thank you.
Honorable Malue?
No, just one last comment here. DDG Manye, if you want, you can just write that note and give it to me. You don't have to answer if you are not ready. You see the green which you are talking about? Your answer says, some in the green will be implemented this financial year, others in the next financial year. Now, I want you to indicate to me which some, because here it is not indicated. I want to go to your APP for this financial year and check the sum that you are saying will be implemented in this financial year, whether they are there or not. And I want, when I interact with your APP 18-19, I must check this one that you are saying they will be included in that financial year, whether they are included or not. Because this is what we must do. Because in whatever you do, you need to be very specific in order for us to be able to measure and so on. So I want to be specific. If you can identify those, if you are able to do it now, do it. If you are not able, just make a note and give me that note.
Okay. I think just to say that because we're still going to have the hearing on the APP, it will be very helpful indeed just to be those things to be identified so that we'll know which one goes into. Rural development, there was a question the chair of Northern Cape asked me to hear on her behalf so that I can brief her. I give you the note.
Oh, thank you, Chair. Yes, I'm writing the love note here. The question basically is about time frames and implementation in relation to the Vision 2030. I believe it says, as we have all these initiatives, when are we going to implement them? I believe it's very linked to what Honorable Member Moloyo has been saying on the immediate implementation and those that are to be done on a later stage. The detailed report contains what we refer to as a three-fit plans and also a detailed presentation of this work also has some targets that are outlined on a multi-year purposes. Chair, we should make that available because for every single initiative, there are targets that are per financial year and indicative costing for those to say if we are saying we are going to improve on horticulture, for example, by how many hectares, what would that translate into in terms of the tonnage of what to produce and all of those. It is available in the presentation and in a detailed report that can be shared and made available. Thank you.
The last thing, what recapitalization, is it? That's how you call it? Minister of Rural Development has pronounced that is going to agriculture. Maybe it's formulated somehow. I don't see it. How does it Indiana Gutila, Honorable Manya, and Rural Development, and how far is the process? So that as we are going to deal with the APPs, we can then start to look at it and say, because it was pronounced by the Minister of Land and in his budget speech. So how far is the process?
Chair, I must answer very slowly. In this case, we, as I've explained, the transfer of functions, and we are working on the agreement to transfer those functions. We expect this agreement would be signed by the end of April between the two ministers. And once the function is transferred, we expect to be assisted by the oversight department, Treasury, DPSA, DPME, for us to effect the transfer. And we would rely on Treasury how that would take effect. But we are setting the work, the plan of transferring the functions. And we trust in that, as you have rightly said, the minister has announced, we expect that the resources would follow the function.
Okay. So the DTI is not announced. So when is the transfer?
Chair, I relied on DPME to speak to that. But my understanding is that once a resolution has been made, in the cabinet, it would go to cabinet, and then the departments would then deal with the administration. I know we have been having those discussions in the department to develop a submission that would be when ready go to cabinet to facilitate the transfer processes.
Okay. Now I can see why Honorable Maloi were impatient with the process. So now I can see why he's impatient. They're still going to the cabinet. We want implementation, it must still go to the cabinet. I thought it was supposed to have gone long time ago after the decision had been taken. Because now 2 years. So now I can see why Honorable Maloi is impatient with him. You know, I was trying to get it reasonably, thinking that is too harsh. I didn't write a note to him that I reduced it. But now I can see that he was right. No, but can we try to increase the pace, Minister? The pace.
Thanks. I understand that the decision to transfer the functions of the department of DTI in as far as agro-processing is concerned was taken at the Lekgotla. What has not happened, as Mr. Manya is saying, is that we have not yet been given the instruction, which will mean that as a department we write a memo to the cabinet and hear the cabinet's view on the matter in question. What I think we should be doing, therefore, after this meeting,
is to do that, which part is from us, so that cabinet, but only cabinet can decide whether they concur or not. We may wish that it is done tomorrow, but it will involve also the transfer of people in the same vein as it is the case with, but luckily with the case of RICAP, there is a decision that the minister has pronounced. On this one, there's not. I think the point is taken.
Thank you very much. No, I didn't hear the revolution. The revolution of the veterinary services.
Thanks, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Honorable Minister. I think Tate Manya gave a response to the revolution, and at that stage I didn't think that it is worth of me to add that currently the programs that you are having within the department that start to seek to deal with the revolutionization of the veterinary services in South Africa. Chair and Honorable Members would recall that we have got the primary animal health care, and we have got also the compulsory community service for vets that are a base in terms of where we want to go. And on top of it, we just approved the veterinary strategy that is going to be used to deal with this. I think Ntate Manya went further in terms of where we are to say that what we need to also do is to pull in private sector investment in terms of our vet services. And we have started to see a lot of initiatives. I think the poultry industry, when they were here, they were already showing signs of also being cozy to the idea and coming up to say they would like to have a triple P. So we will try to also use the triple P avenues in order for us to fully revolutionize the veterinary services. Thanks, Chair and Honorable Member.
Just one last point, Chair. You'll forgive me. You know, when we came back after lunch, the minister was saying, "I hope that the people have had lunch. It will be a graveyard session. Won't have many questions." So I did not eat lunch, just to make sure that I'm not part of the graveyard session. Chair, the minister says, Cabinet Lekgotla took a decision to transfer certain functions. They have not received any instruction. From who? Because I thought that once you are in a Cabinet Lekgotla and a decision is taken and so on, relevant department must act on that one. For an example, in this case, I would have expected agriculture not to wait for instruction from somebody because there is a decision already. That they need to interact with that other person in order for them to prepare a memo. But there might be something that I'm missing because it seems you're waiting for any instruction. It's an instruction from whom? From the president or from where exactly?
Sorry, let me again apologize for I may have been misleading. The decision was taken at the ANC Lekgotla. Therefore, the minutes thereof should relate that. As a department, as I said, we need to write a letter to the cabinet relating the story and outlining our desire, because the matter was not resolved then for the first time. It has been a matter been raised because one of the hamstringing issues has been the fact that you promote a production of a particular commodity, and yet there is no capacity to have the infrastructure for processing. In some instances, such are built without permanent production. There are many such cases, as the two departments seem not have been coordinating properly. What I'm saying is that what we need, therefore, to fast-track that we write a memo to cabinet relating the decision that was taken at the ANC Lekgotla, and try to put to cabinet the view that says this area of agricultural value chain can be realized if production is also done in concurrence with the preparation for the processing part thereof. Let me correct that. It was not the cabinet Lekgotla, it was the ANC Lekgotla.
Okay, thank you very much. Dr. Ngoma.
Yeah, I'm finally the Honourable Chair. Thank you for the opportunity just to say one last input. I think from the side of DPME, we want to appreciate the commitment by honourable members of the committee to use the APP for oversight on the implementation of the PAKISA program. I think that will help us a great deal in terms of ensuring we keep our eye on the ball. On that note, I want to probably suggest that the scrutiny on the APP not be limited to only DAF and rural development and land reform, because some of the initiatives, for them to be successful, there has to be direct leadership by departments outside the two. I'll use as an example the initiative seeking to unlock water to expand horticulture that we just discussed. It really needs the Department of Water and Sanitation to have their hands on the pulse to make sure that initiatives succeed. The same applies to the initiative to ensure trade promotion, retention, and optimization. It requires the DTI. So I don't know what mechanism the committee uses, but just to ensure there is that oversight across committees on the initiatives arising from the PAKISA, not only this one and other PAKISAs as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We want to take the opportunity to thank the presentation and that we will follow up on the issues. We'll see them. We'll meet them in the APPs. If we don't meet them there, then the fight will start. So the good part of this committee is that you have people with their memories very sharp. You know, Honorable Stein will tell you in 2014 this is what you have said. Honorable Tapa will do the same. Maloy will do the same. So you are in trouble. So you must because this is a general, it's a vision that we want to achieve as a sector. But what is important, it will then be the target and the indicators that lead us there with the time frame. I usually say that if you want to create 1 million jobs for 2030, you must start now, and we must see that at least this term of parliament, out of 1 million, at least there is, if you miss that 200,000 for this term of parliament, it's going to be difficult for you to reach that million. So means that by the end of the term, we should then be able to say, as agriculture, indeed, we have started, we have done 200,000, we have created 200,000 jobs. Because 20, you divide 20 by 4, the term has got 5. So if we cannot do that, then we'll have a problem. Irrigation, we're supposed to irrigate land so many by 2020. We must say by then the first term of implementation of development plan, this is so much land that was irrigated. Then it will convince people that you will reach the 2020. So if you have not started, no one will have a hope of this
program. And thank you very much, honorable members, for the questions and the team and ministers for the response. The last agenda is tomorrow, honorable members, there is a meeting with the DTI portfolio committee discussing the issue of poultry. So we just thought it's important for us as agriculture to listen to the view of the department so that as we go into that meeting, we understand what has been the perspective of agriculture and how do we then intervene in the other meetings. So we'll now allow those that are supposed to lead us on poultry to present. And thank you very much, the team Pakisa. Poultry. Did you still you?
Let me try to say that as he will be showing, one of the challenges our country is faced with are the high input costs, because between 75% and 70% of what chicks consume is from yellow maize and soybeans, and we're just and most of those are imported, which makes the cost therefore of production to be very, very high. But two, we have got other problems. The fact that we're from drought means that most of what is used for feed is imported. I think our production of the one-day chicks has been very low compared to our of the meat that is consumed, creating a situation where South Africa is an importer of broilers more than that which it produces. Those are challenges, and I'm sure made worse is the issue I referred to earlier, the fact that we seem to be a dumping field for different countries in terms of the brown meat, or which they call the meat in bones, from the EU, from America. So those compound the situation such that the poultry industry is under strain. And I understand that the SAPA, which is African Poultry Association, and the FAO, the union, have approached a cabinet with the view of finding a solution in assisting them to deal with the matter. Most of their companies, especially in the KZN, are on the verge of running down. So those are few issues that I think are facing us. And I'm sure Mr. Ramaswamy will take us through on the technical matters on the issue.
Thank you very much, Minister. Honorable Minister, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, we are going to provide almost a short version in terms of the issues that were raised by SAPA and FAO as they appeared before the Portfolio Committee during this month. Honorable members are aware that tomorrow there will be a presentation that will be made at the Portfolio Committee as called by the DTI. And in that presentation, there are probable solutions that were presented as probable solutions from the task team. However, the task team has not concluded in terms of the work that it's currently doing. It's ongoing. And therefore, we would have liked to then provide a response in terms of the broad brush issues that were raised by the two bodies when they appeared before Parliament. As an outline, firstly, we would like to indicate that the broiler industry and its value chain is very complex. It is integrated to other value chains, especially the feeding value chain, and this integration is also seen through a lot of companies which are vertically integrated, and you have got a level of dominance within the market, broiler value chain market that we are seeing. And as Minister has already indicated, we have got two major inputs in terms of the feeding, which is almost 70% of this. It is soya and yellow maize. And this is a simplified way of dealing with this. On top, we have got the supply of day old chicks, which is also part of this value chain. And as I discuss going further, I will outline the issues that we are facing in terms of this area. Now, this is a more complex way of dealing with the value chain, although not fully outlined, but it's just to show how this value chain is. Of importance is the middle part, which deals with how the firms are really comprised in terms of production. The production level, you would have integrated firms that would have everything within up to supplying at retail level, and you have got those who are also integrated but would have different ways in terms of supplying by having them as contract growers, and you would have the independents who are within the value chain. Now, this slide has been given previously to just highlight that South Africa is within the top 20 in terms of the consumption of poultry meat. In actual fact, it's the preferred animal protein source in South Africa. And we appear, I think, it's number 17 in terms of those. And if you look at the production figures, you would realize that in terms of production, South Africa produces 1.7% of the world production of poultry. And the leading countries are U.S., China, Brazil, and the EU, which we will discuss going forward. Now, this paints a picture in terms of the movement of consignments. There's a clear indication that Brazil has got exports. While they are the third biggest producer, they export quite a lot. And you would find that the EU also exports to us what you call as brown meat or bone-in meat to South Africa. And we also have got imports from Brazil. And I hope that in terms of the current discussions and discourse, we would know of the scandal that has broken out in Brazil in terms of their exports of meat to different places, and we will also just touch base on it. Now, if we look at the chicken exporters, South Africa appears it's not the major importer of exporter of chicken meat. The truth is that South Africa produces just above 1.7 million tons. And the consumption in South Africa is 2.1 million tons. So that would mean that at any given rate, South Africa would not be producing enough for its own population. So you would have this imports that we are having, and that makes South Africa an importer of meat. Now, we as a country, based on the 2015 stats, the 2016 would say that this has increased, I think, to just above 500,000, that you would have imports that are coming through. Now, what has been indicated is most of the time that the question would be on bone-in meats. We don't only import bone-in meats, we also import other parts in terms of within that commodity, including the mechanically deboned meat that comes in, that is used for sausages that we have. And that is one of the areas that we think from our side can be exploited to start such factories in South Africa to ensure that we also produce mechanically deboned meat. Now, what are the challenges that we have? And I think that when both SAPA and FAO appeared before the August House, they indicated that the feed costs are quite high. Now, last year we had the worst drought that we ever experienced. You would say that the feed costs were also on a high. And as knowing that between 70 and 75% of your production would go to feeding, it would be true that because we had to import yellow maize and we had to import soya, that we would import at import parity prices, not at local, because most of the time we would have enough maize for the industry to absorb that. Now, this time we had to import both ingredients, being maize and soya, and that led to a lot of squeeze when it came to the industry. The other one would be the electricity cost. You would know that South Africa, our winter months are very cold, and we need to have insulation during that period. and with the increases that we had in terms of tariff from ESCOM, you would have those increases. The issue around labor, having done an analysis, would say that once you have got a squeeze in terms of your cost, the sacrificial lamb in terms of your basis would be labor in this case, and that is where we see most of the issues happening, because obviously you wouldn't stop feeding the chickens, you wouldn't do electricity cuts. So in terms of the current system that we are seeing, it is our considered view that labor in this case becomes a sacrificial lamb in terms of the cost. Now, there were presentations that came from SAPA indicating the earnings before interest and taxes, EBIT, that says that South Africa is almost the second lowest when it comes to this. Now, if you have got to apply a logical framework in terms of thinking and using deductive logic, it would say that if we are at that level, the things that are on at risk here would be at a production level. It's either other countries are being subsidized, or alternatively, the feed costs that they are having are quite low. And it is true in terms of the feeding cost, because if you look at South Africa and you compare it with other countries of the very same standard, we have got very high feeding costs. I think if you compare us with Brazil, you compare us with the U.S., we come very low, but we are better than the EU in this case. And we would also depart from an issue to say that it's an unprotected industry. When we negotiated the TDCA with the EU, and which came into effect in 2005, one of the things was that we will liberalize the tariffs 5 years after the trade agreement came into effect. And once that happened in 2012, 7 years down the line, we started seeing quite a lot of influx in terms of the chickens coming into the South African market. Although we have had a safeguard duty that was put into place in December of this year, we still have got to see what the impact would be. And it's one of those arguments that DAF would always have to say, since this safeguard duty came into play in December, we still need to see how it came, it affects the trade now as it is. We also had the brand new regulations. Now, just over 60% of the chicken that is sold in South Africa is individually quick frozen chicken, IQS. Now, IQS in the past did not have a limit in terms of branding. Over the years, the department has been with the industry to say that let us reduce brining in terms of what is being used to a level where the industry decided to self-regulate and brought it to 30. Even when we were at 30, there were those industries that were still abusing the system and ensuring that they maximize in terms of profit. Since last year, when we implemented a new regime in terms of the brining, to say that for individually quick frozen chickens, we would have the branding levels being kept at 15%, there would have been an impact in terms of the industry itself. Now, there would also be global dynamics that I would not talk really to, but I would like to highlight that as there were individual indications that Russia would not be taking quite a lot from the EU, now one would assume that one of the areas that would have been exploited at that stage, it would have been South Africa, and that is why we think it would be like that. And it's very important, maybe just before I depart from this slide that deals with the challenges, that part of those is that our trade subsidies in terms of this, as a country, we still have got to utilize the boxes that are there within the WTO in terms of assisting our industries, and I think that's one of the explorations that we need to do. Now, after that presentation, we need to also, as a department, to highlight our discomfort in terms of the poultry industry. One of the areas that we are really uncomfortable about is the transformation agenda that the poultry industry has. They have got a transformation agenda, but we strongly believe that transformation is not happening at that rate that we would like to see it. And we also believe that transformation should never be used as a tool for negotiation, because it's an imperative in terms of the country cohesion going forward. And in most instances, when we engage on issues of importance with the industry, one of the things that comes to the table, and we have been on record to say, we cannot do it that way, to say that let us do this, and in lieu, in exchange for that, there will be accelerated transformation. We don't believe that that's the way that we should be moving in tandem. And I think that tomorrow there will be a presentation that also shows that level of articulation to say the industry is indicating that there would be a reciprocal way of dealing with transformation issues. Now, the industry is also plagued by competition issues. Honorable members would recall that in 2012 there was a big issue in terms of Astral and the uncompetitive behavior in terms of the industry. The Competition Commission has looked at collusion, price fixing. They have looked at information exchanges within the industry. So those are checks and balances that are in place just to say that the industry has got to be in line with what we are saying. Now, this has been presented before, to say what is the multiplier effect in terms of the industry, to say for each and every 10,000 tons that are produced, then we will have 1,069 jobs, both direct and indirect. And we know and highlighted that we have got RCLing of people 1,350 in different areas. Now, these are the current jobs that the poultry industry supports in terms of the grain industry, and those are the direct jobs, the indirect jobs that are there if we have got to deal with the issue around import. Now, before I depart from here, I just need to say we cannot altogether, with the current system that we are having as a country, say that we will not import poultry. We first need to ramp up our own production and increase our own production and explore other ways and means on how we can deal with the current issue that we are having. And I'll talk to those later on. Now, I will now focus on the specifics that were requested by the Food and Allied Workers Union. Sorry, there's an apostrophe that's missing there. There's an indication that we immediately need to raise tariffs and implement safeguard measures and explore imposing anti-dumping duties. Already we have got a safeguard of 13.9%, and there is currently an investigation within ITEC to look at how we can safeguard, we can introduce tariffs in terms of this. So there's work that is happening in that area. There is also a request that in a short run, we need to explore embarking on a trade door with the EU by employing reciprocal technical barriers to trade on the leg quotas that our country's retail chores are importing from the EU. As a department, our view is that any measure that is being to be taken, either from a departmental point or even from a customs point of view, has got to take into cognizance the provisions of the WTO, specifically two agreements, as the WTO has got different annexes, one on the agreement on sanitary and phytosanitary measures, and the other one on technical barriers to trade, together with their standard setting bodies. So as long as that is within those confines, we will be comfortable. And we will deal with this in terms of what are those provisions and what are those principles that we think we need to observe in order for us to implement measures that would be in the field of SPS and TBT. The other one, it says in terms of this, that we have got to look at a way of dealing with issues around equivalence when it comes to a highly pathogenic avian influenza, the way that the EU is dealing with highly pathogenic avian influenza, where we have got to fill in the questionnaire, and once they allow us in, they would periodically also come to do what we call investigations to check the systems of South Africa.
we are of the view that while it was presented to the portfolio committee as a way of expressing how we should be doing duties, we should hasten to say that we had eight of the countries that were exporting to South Africa suspended because of avian flu. However, currently only seven, sorry about that, it's seven of those are still suspended to export to us. We just listed the ban on Denmark. In terms of us doing this, it is in line with the provisions of the OIE, which is the World Organization on Animal Health, to say that self-declaration by countries is allowed, and we are also doing it. And we also verify in terms of what is being presented. Before South Africa is satisfied with what is presented in front of us by another country, there will be no opening of market. The only issue that we don't do at this moment is to conduct business in this country. And as honorable members would know, this is a very costly exercise that currently within our provisions we are unable to do. But we have got enough safeguards in terms of this, and we also do verification with our port of entry for the meat that comes in. There was also an issue around the long-term strategic issues, looking at upscaling, the cost and other issues that are there. And in terms of Operation Pagisa that was presented now, and in terms of the revitalization of agriculture and agro-processing value chains, and in terms of the Agricultural Policy Action Plan, we think that we have got plans that can start to assist in terms of dealing with the poultry industry. And we will try to highlight what is currently happening from a departmental point of view in the poultry industry. Now, we deliberately, Chair, Honorable Chair, did not go verbatim when it came to supply issues, because that would have taken almost the work that is being done within the task team out here. But we want to address the principles and some of the issues that we think would need to be addressed. Now, the desired short and long-term outcomes of SAPA was that they required exporters to produce products for South Africa, not simply those that are disposed as stored waste. They would like to have a WTO compliant and treaty compliant way of dealing with issues. They would like to ensure that imports are based on national needs, not on unconstrained importers' greed. There's a reduction of imports by at least half, which is an admission that at this moment imports are a necessary evil. And then lastly, the issues in terms of supporting industry sustainability, reinvestment, food security and job creation. Now, in short, the department agrees with the articulation from SAPA. And as in the previous area, we strongly believe that South Africa trades in not only in poultry, it trades in other commodities. And as we implement measures within the poultry industry, we should be aware that it should be compliant to what the world standards are saying. Now, the Honorable Chair earlier on had indicated the issue around how we revolutionize the veterinary services. There were proposals that came specifically dealing with disease management coming from SAPA, which we agree with in terms of dealing with pre-border, border and post-border activities, and also the development of what would have been what is called the poultry disease management agents, which we really welcome, Chair, because it will give us the way of leveraging on private sector funds on revolutionizing veterinary services, and we are quite willing to explore that on a bigger forum with SAPA. There was an issue around us also coming up with an export agency, and we are of the opinion that we might need further deliberation with SAPA, of which we are doing, and there's an executive of SAPA who's sitting in this meeting here today, that it might not necessarily mean us to get an export agency. There are a lot of mechanisms that are in place used by different commodity groups on how we access markets.
And I will use the food industry, for instance. We have got what we call the food industry value chain roundtable, which we utilize to prioritize markets on how we access these markets. And we also utilize the DTI trade promotion in terms of doing that. So there are mechanisms that we can just put together, not an agency per se. And we also have got to really also applaud the issue around the dedicated support to remove SPS barriers. And it goes both ways in terms of South Africa, in terms of other countries that we are having. And we are currently in discussions, Chair, with the National Treasury on how we can have an import-export clearinghouse that would look at risk analysis, because the basis of any measure is based on having a very good risk analysis, so that you argue from a scientific base as you advance your position. And the issue around resolving the Namibian access matter, this matter has been discussed within the DTI. As you know that most of the SADC countries are having poultry as an infant industry and therefore would protect it against imports from neighboring countries like ourselves. Now, there was also an argument from SAPA to say, let us remove the soybean and oil cake tariff, which is currently sitting at 8%. The question is that, aren't we transferring the very same problem that you are currently experiencing with the poultry industry? Because the removal of the tariff would mean that there would be an influx, and therefore you are creating or even displacing a problem that you are currently having to another sector that is important to your value chain. And therefore, we are of the view that this might just need an in-depth investigation to fully allay ourselves. We are aware that there was a proposal to say that let us have indirect subsidies that go into the system, but that is also something that we need to look at. There's an issue around regulation of the market, and knowing where we come from in terms of deregulation of markets around the mid to late 90s, where there was a view that South Africa has got to deregulate, this proposal seems to say that let us reverse some of those, and it is a real policy issue that needs to be explored. It cannot be done hastily because we have got a problem. It's something that needs to be in the long term to be looked at. And the last one would be the one around the establishment of a mechanically deboned meat plant or plants in South Africa. This idea is really supported because this is the Achilles heel of our system, because we don't really add value in terms of the products that we are having. And if we have got this, and this is viewed as also an avenue in terms of transformation in the country, I think that there is no way that we cannot support that. I would like to just spend a few minutes in terms of explaining the two agreements that we are having in place. One around sanitary and phytosanitary measures, and then TBT, because this is one area that everybody says that let us do that. I just want to take the honorable members through this agreement. Now, if you look at the WTO SPS, it's mainly meant to look at four things. One, to protect human life. Two, to protect animal life, not to say that it's less important. Three, to protect plant life. And lastly, to protect the country. And if you have got to look at what is entailed in terms of looking at issues that have got to deal with human life, you have got additives, you have got toxins, there's a list that is there. And you have got also plant and animal care diseases. As you know, that some of the animal diseases can be transferred from animals to humans, so you also safeguard them. In terms of animal life, you would look at additives, you would also look at toxins, whether it's from a meat safety point of view or from an animal disease point of view. You have got pest diseases and disease-causing organisms. And in terms of plants, which is not our point of discussion today, but has got an impact because of the value chains that are there, look at pests and diseases and disease-causing organisms. And of course, the protection of a country per se. And any other thing that has got to deal with labeling that is of quality nature and not affecting the four areas that I've indicated becomes a TBT. All of those have got rules and regulations at the world level that govern those. So we will in terms of this, look at the provisions in terms of them. Now, we thought that it's very important to take honorable members into confidence when you talk about the WTO, SCS and TBT as a non-tariff measure or as non-tariff barriers, depending on whether they have been a barrier, determined to be a barrier. Now, it depends on a principle of being least trade restricting. So, if you have got to set up measures, you need to set up what we call an appropriate level of protection to say that this country would be protected at this level. Now, you cannot require more in terms of measures than you need to be protected. That's basically what least trade restrictiveness would entail. Now, all of those would be based on scientific justification or even technical justification on TBT issues. So we cannot be arbitrary when it comes to these measures that are there. There is a scientific process that needs to be followed to arrive at a decision to say that we have assessed the risk. These are the measures that we think should be in place to mitigate the risk, or this why we avoid the risk by saying that you cannot import from this country or any other country. The other one is that is of harmonization. Harmonization would say that they are international standard setting bodies, and we recognize them as the standard setting bodies. If we have got to go outside the confines of any international standards where there is a standard, then you need to justify through science why are you going to that level. And these are the issues in terms of this articulation that we need to know. And one of the arguments that is being advanced quite a lot is the issue around equivalence. Now, if we say equivalence, it would say we agree as a country that the real thing that we need to deal with is risk. Now, if you implement measures that would ensure that you have mitigated the risk to a level where you satisfy my appropriate level of protection, and those measures are not necessarily the same as I do in my country, that is called equivalence. So I can decide that, to use quite a simple example, to say that in order for me to be able to export mangoes to a particular place, you should heat treat them. If heat treatment is the same as maybe using a fumigant to use them, that is called equivalent, to say that using a different approach, but we arrive at the very same result in terms of risk management. The other one is that SCS measures and TBT measures should not discriminate between imports and exports. Once a product lands in a country, it should be treated the same. So you cannot discriminate to say this is an import, I'll treat it differently from that. So that's one area that's very important. And the last one would say any measure that we implement in a country should be informed at international level. If we decide to change any of our measures, we need to internationally inform other members. Most of the current court cases that we are having in place is because of this issue around the transparency agreement that is there. So I thought it would be important, just in terms of the implementation of measures, to take honorable members into confidence on the principles of the WTO. Now, I'll quickly go through what we are currently doing. Currently, in terms of this quadrants that were provided for in the National Development Plan and that are entailed in our Agricultural Policy Action Plan, we will realize that we have got four quadrants. One that says that they have got very high potential. One and two are very high potential. Two is labor intensive, and we have got to look at. Now, we have identified poultry as one of those winners that we need to look at. Poultry is together with soybean. So that value chain is already locked in terms of high growth potential and within the country. And we would like to also draw attention to say that on two, you have got very high labor intensive production that you are having. That is also export orientated. That would need to also be looked at from a country position. And then lastly, we also have got those in three and four. But in terms of our discussions today, we're only looking at one in terms of soybeans, poultry, and also yellow maize for production. But we shouldn't lose sight that here's a total picture of where South Africa as a PGYLTD would like to go, as we discuss broadly. Now, when we look at the poultry value chain problem statement as contained in the APAP and also contained in the agro revitalization of agriculture and agro-processing value chains, we are aware that the consumption of white meat is expected to grow by 34% up to 2023. And as indicated, it's supplemented with input. Now, the only way that we can deal with is two ways, is to ramp up our production and also deal with issues around animal feed. There are current interventions that we are having in terms of the IDC looking at investment in thrashing plants for soybean in the country, and this will reduce our dependence of on important oil cake meal. We are also looking at the ITEC looking at investigating the protection of the industry in terms of imports, and as indicated, we had a safeguard in December, and there is also a study that is currently being conducted to provide for further protection. We are also looking at local procurement by government, as signified in various interventions that we are having, to say that government should be buying local in terms of their pets. And we also looking at triple BEE codes just to support local food networks, and that's one of the outputs that we have had from Operation Hakisa. There are risks in terms of this, and we have highlighted those in terms of how we should need to deal with it, because animal feed would also be linked to fertilizer costs, mechanization, and fuel costs that we are having. Now, we had aspirations in terms of where we wanted to go in terms of the in 2014 going to 2019. This were interrupted by drought that we experienced, and currently we think that we will recover. But how best we will recover in terms of moving the gross domestic product from this value chain to 41.3% by 2019 is still need to be quantified. Now, these are the current initiatives that we are having. Together with the leading departments that are there, we are concentrating on CP11 to come up with the infrastructure in terms of looking at, firstly, poultry houses, irrigation schemes, new schemes that we have along the rivers in terms of ramping up production, maize and soya. We are looking at delivery of offtake agreements with feed companies. The issue that the Honorable Chair had raised on land acquisition to get strategically located land to ensure that we can then push this. We also have in the National Poultry Production Program that looks at the recapitalization and development of smallholder farmers. And for the coming year, we have got 123 million that is going to be spent from CAS to deal with this. We have got standardized and targeted input supply packages for small farmers in terms of soybean and maize. I know that we're spending this year just over 300 million in CAS in terms of production of maize, which would also include yellow maize, but most of this will be for consumption. And we're also looking at a poultry research program. If you look at the great parent stock that we are having here, all of it is important until it's then taken to the next level, which is different levels in terms of the value chain. So we need to look at how best are we going to have efficient broiler production systems, high-yielding varieties in terms of soybean, and also vaccine development and general health research in terms of birds and integration into a national management plan to deal with diseases, as proposed also by SAPA. This is one example in terms of the spatial maps that we have developed in terms of then granularizing our own interventions on poultry. In conclusion, we are of the opinion that and still believe that poultry production is the mainstay of agricultural production in South Africa. And it would jolt South Africa in three ways in terms of food security, job creation, and economic growth. And the sustainability of this sector is very important for this, to the sector, agricultural sector in general, and for the country. Our way of addressing the current challenges should be a measured approach. And our issue is that we have had these interventions before. It is not the first time that the poultry industry has been in crisis. Each and every time there is a stopgap measure, and that stopgap measure is only to be interrupted by a need for another stopgap measure. So what we need is a long-term view of how we address the poultry industry. And in terms of what we would like to leave with the committee, that if there is an application of any measure, this country should not expose itself to be in contravention to WTO arrangement. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Honorable members, that was the presentation, question or discussion around the presentation. Honorable Jaisa, Honorable Maloyi, and Honorable Spain, and Honorable Kapa, Honorable Mapanga. Honorable Jaisa.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. It is very much interesting to note that questions that you put to the department are very much structured. I'm just commenting that it's very much important to note that the questions that you put to the department are in structured in a very interesting way. For instance, mine would be easy questions, then from the middle, moderate, then from that side, where Maloy, difficult one. Honorable Chairperson, mine is very short and easy. I just want to check because I heard in the presentation that the country does not produce enough chicken meat, if I got it correct. Then at the same time, the rainbow chicken industry is busy or has just retrenched some employees because they can't produce more since this cannot be consumed. So I just want to check perhaps if you can just reconcile these two statements. There is this retrenchment because they cannot produce more. Then again now the country cannot produce more, but they cannot produce more chicken meat. So I want a reconciliation between these two, as if now there is a sort of contradiction that I can't understand. So I want to get clarity on that. I wonder if you got me clear, but I know we are a very brilliant gentleman. Should have just got me clear. Thank you very much.
No, thanks, Chair. The first question is on transformation. The department is indicating to us that SAPA does have a transformation agenda, but it is not moving at a faster pace. I'll be very interested to know as to what is the department doing to ensure that SAPA moves at a faster pace. Or is there any reason that makes not to ensure that this transformation agenda is done and is done quickly? The second question is on slide 15. But before that, you know, you, Ramashodi, you are saying to us, whatever we do, we need to ensure that we observe the provisions and the principles of the World Trade Organization. Now, the question which I want to pose to yourself is, are these countries, and particularly the EU, observing the provisions and the principles of WTO? Because from the presentation we got, SAPA was saying, let's apply the GIGABA approach. The GIGABA approach meaning that if EU does something to us, let's do the same, tit for tat. And FAO was saying,
let's get into a trade war. Let's do what they do to us and so on and so forth. Now, from just those statements, they were suggesting that the EU countries are not observing the provisions and the principles of WTO. Now, your presentation seemed to suggest that those countries do observe these principles and provisions. Is that what you are saying, and are you sure about what you are saying? The third matter which I want to raise is the dedicated unit to conduct the risk analysis. You are saying it is currently under consideration by DAF. Can you be a little bit specific? You are thinking about it, that there is a suggestion which was done, so we are still thinking about it. Or have you done some work around that particular aspect? The other question related to that is the task teamwork, which is incomplete, according to you when you started, and I hope I heard you correctly. That the work of the task team is incomplete and so on. You know, I would have thought that in the meeting which took place, I'm not sure, I think it was on the 17th or the 18th, the meeting of the task team, is where you are all going to come together and so on, bring that work and then come with proposals. Now, if you're saying it is incomplete, I'm worried. I'm worried that we seem to be dragging our feet in terms of dealing with issues of this nature. And we can't leave this thing any longer. Our biggest problem as this portfolio committee is that whilst we are discussing, we don't complete work and so on, abattoirs are closing, farms are closing, our people are losing their jobs. So this is a serious problem, a serious problem. And you might want, when you answer that question, to also answer as to what is it that we are doing as a department in terms of addressing the farms that are closed already? Are we doing something about it? With, except referring to SIP 11, because those are intentions and so on and so forth. With the current problem, are we doing something about it? And what is that something which we are doing? You know, this situation reminds me of the 2016... the aqua thing, the pork portions from the United States, where in one way or the other, we're allowing them to bypass the VPN. This reminds me of that situation, but that was just a comment. Thanks, Chair.
Chairperson, yes, I want to thank the department for the presentation. It's a difficult issue. I think, you know, we've been dealing with this, the poultry industry, for a very, very, very long time. I remember way back, even when we started discussing the whole thing of avian influenza and the phytosanitary measures and all the things that needs to happen. Chair, my question is, would we have had the same situation if we did not have the drought? What was the impact of the increase in food prices? I remember, Chair, last year or the previous year when we had the presentation from the different industries at, you know, while we were in the drought, they showed a lot of slides, and maybe we must go back to those, a lot of slides on how it will impact the poultry industry. So is this a slight dump in the poultry industry because of the drought, and if feed prices drops, will we report it? Will we turn it around? So I don't want us to have a massive or major reaction to a natural phenomenon that happened in our country. So I would like us to deal with that one first. Then, Chairperson, how far are we on dealing with our phytosanitary measures? We now have a very important person sitting on that OIE, and I see he sits there in the back room today, very quiet, very quiet, and he's not listening. No, he's not even smiling at this. Chair, can't we move on that? Because I think it's one of our problems. If we can start exporting certain of our poultry products at a price that, you know, would fetch a higher price in other countries, is that not also part of the solution? Then, Chair, my other concern is that poultry prices on the shelf is increasing in South Africa. I've just read somewhere it says 6% year on year from January this year to that year. If we get this huge amount of poultry into the country that's supposedly supposed to be on a lower than what we can, you know, produce here, why don't we see the impact on the shelves? Why do we have increased? Ek is nou baie moeg gedink, ek kan nou glad nie meer Engels ding praat of redeneer nie. So why is the increase in poultry prices? Then slide 16, on the whole thing of, let's call it dumping, World Trade Organization and discussions of that. The point is, if we don't produce enough meat in South Africa, this guy's poultry meat, it must come from somewhere because people want it and there's a demand for it. So what has SAPA done in the last, but I'll ask him tomorrow, but from your perspective, done to fill that gap? And maybe that brings us back to the transformation discussion, because if there's a need for something, someone else will fill that need. So the local producers, did we grow over the last 10, 15 years when this massive increase into the need arose, or what did we do in the last few years? I think the question of the dumpy, do the other role players play within the rules of the World Trade Organization, that question was asked, but I would also be interested to hear that. There's one last question that I can't remember now, Chair, but let's give other people. Oh, I see it's here. Chair, on slide, and now it doesn't have a number, South African Poultry Association Disease Management. I see we have the Revolutionary Veterinary Services here again. Is the department ready to revolutionize our veterinary services so that we can get our phytosanitary rules in place? Is it something that lies with the department, or is it something that lies with the industry that needs to be fixed? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable,
thank you, Chair. Let me also thank Mr. Ramaswamy for his input. That's small questions. This issue of high input costs. What actually makes this to be a serious problem for us when these things are supposed to be produced within South Africa? And is there any link between these high input costs and and any possible involvement of other producers? Because I'm worried here, because the first thing is indication that while we have these high input costs, and yet these soybeans and maize, we produce them here, and is there any link now between other production costs? I think almost all animals that we have here in South Africa, livestock, the cattle, the sheep, and your pigs also, will need this soybeans for protein and this yellow maize for energy. But it seems it's this poultry which is having a serious problem with this high input costs. And furthermore, these high input costs, they go right at the end. That's the ultimate product, is the loss of jobs. This solution of loss of jobs also, it worries me because it does seem that maybe it's a stick that would make us to really feel that because our people are going to lose jobs, let's do something. I'm just worried about that one, but I know it's a fact when they do lose jobs. But now, this issue of WTO and other areas like EU, at what stage do we or are we able to apply our own measures and our own conditions and principles? Or are we always relying on outside policies or outside conditions that are pro and are imposed on us? But now I'd also like to understand what actually, concretely, would us as a committee or on behalf of parliament try to do here in order to resuscitate this situation, because it does seem that it becomes clear that it is a problem. And also in negotiations, why does it seem that we are always vulnerable and on these trade and negotiations as South Africans? But at the same time, it's clear that we have to come with all these ideas, we have to come to a solution and common understanding. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, I think my questions have been covered by the previous speakers. I'm only left with comments, Chair, in particular on slide 27, where it relates to the soya bean and the yellow maize. Chair, I think a more radical approach towards soya beans production must be adopted, and most smallholder farmers must be encouraged to be involved in soya beans production. And also on slide 15, with regard to the responses by DAF, I just want to check if the responses are enough to save the jobs of the men and women who are sacrificing for their country. What we need now is a solution that will also benefit us, not cause us detriment. If 13.9% of safeguard duty can create more jobs for us, then it is enough. But if not, then we are still sitting with the same problem. Chair, I submit.
Honorable Mandela.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I just wish to indicate I actually came for another meeting which was meant to start after this one. Hence my arrival at this late hour, Chair. I would have loved to have been here since this morning. Very, very much interesting presentation there in the table. Chair, I...